Amazon Cosmos. What is it?
It's a large-scale e-commerce common sense knowledge generation and serving system at Amazon.
Basically, if you search something like home decor right now on Amazon, you're going to get a whole bunch of products that have home decor somewhere in their title, in their bullets. They're starting to change this to say, okay, when someone searches home decor, what is their intent of that search? So they take that home decor search, plug it into a large language model, like a ChatGPT equivalent, and say, what are people normally looking for when they look for home decor? And it says, like, well, they might be looking for wall art, or they might be looking for furniture, or they might be looking for this and that. And so Amazon will now take those categories and show you the top ranking wall art, and it'll show you the top ranking chair. Instead of just showing you everything that ranks well for the term home decor and put home decor 10 times in their title, it's going to use your search and show you a variety of things to narrow it down.
How did Spotlight Oral Care get 6 million views and over $30,000 in earned media value on TikTok? How did Plant People drive a 50% decrease in cost per add to cart and over a 30% increase in ROAS? To go big like these brands, you gotta think small and work with mini social micro influencers to create authentic UGC for your brand. Tired of hunting down and DMing creators on social, negotiating back and forth, only to have their one-off post flop and not impact your sales? Leave it to MiniSocial to handle all the nitty-gritty of booking the right creators for your brand, delivering top-quality content you can use across your ads and organic social media. Ready to try them out for yourself? Get 15% off your first project when you start in Q2. To claim your D2C listener discount, just go to dtc.minisocial.com. It's all killer, no filler. I'm Eric, and I'm back with Pilot House's Amazon Brain Trust, as I like to call them, Rob and Clifford. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, we got a few fun things today. So we can start on any which one we want, but Amazon rolled out some new fees, which we can go over. Clifford's been going deep into placement modifiers lately, so that's a whole fun world for advertising. And then we got a fun little thing called Amazon Cosmos that we can get into.
Nice. Well, let's start with the bad news first. What's going on with the fees?
Okay, I want to preface this with the entire Amazon seller industry is saying fees are bad and Amazon is bad. In my eyes, hey, fees done right from your brand's end are a way that you now have price competitiveness over the brands who ignore the fees and realize they're less profitable and then have to raise their prices. So fees can mean an opportunity to win more on Amazon.
That's a good positive spin. You sound like Justin Trudeau talking about the carbon tax. It's actually more money back in your pocket. I take it first. I put some of it back in your pocket and say, you like that?
Listen, as an electric car owner, I love the carbon tax.
Nice.
As we move into the inventory placement fee is the big, this is the big one that a lot of people are complaining about. And with fair reason, it's a pretty rough fee where Amazon is basically saying that they've eaten the cost this whole time of distribution of your inventory across their fulfillment network across the country. For example, last year, if you would send in, say, a pallet of your stuff all in one pallet, a lot of the time Amazon might just have you send that to one fulfillment center, sometimes two or three, but usually just one or two. It's not too many. But then what they'd have to do with that is split up that pallet, send it into 20, 30 different fulfillment centers across the country. Now, they're saying, if you're prepping your inventory in a way that prevents them from kind of doing, or for that's only going to let you send to one place or two places, like if it's all in like one box, like they're not going to open boxes type of thing, then they're going to charge you a fee for that. Or if you want to just go to one place, you can, but they're going to charge you a fee for that. And if you don't want to pay that fee, they're splitting your shipments now into much larger pieces. So now you're going to, instead of having to send to two or three places, some shipments are getting split into 6, 8, 9 places. So you have to take your pallet, split it into 7 different shipments, and send it to 7 different places if you don't want to pay the fee. Now, the real reason this is such a big complaint for brands is either way, they're screwed. Because if they pay the fee and they just send to one place, their freight is cheaper, but they end up paying a large fee that ends up making their total inbound cost way larger. If they split up the shipment, turns out the freight costs go through the roof and ends up being substantially more expensive as well. So either way they're losing. Amazon has recognized this through all of the backlash they've started to get from it and are bringing in a small reduction to the per unit fulfillment fees following that. Small reduction in many size cases, not every single size case. But for most, it doesn't actually overcome that placement fee difference. However, it's still cheaper in almost every case, at least in the US, to utilize Amazon's inbound shipping services than it is to like go to FedEx or a different freight provider yourself and send a pallet to an Amazon fulfillment center yourself. It's still cheaper to use Amazon services. So they didn't raise it so much that it's like going to force you to use other freight carriers. You're still kind of stuck using Amazon's partnered carrier shipping. It's just substantially more expensive.
And so when it comes to our clients, brass tacks, that's basically what most people are doing. It's just because it's the other way. It's just a lot. It's more of your labor. You have to take more time to split things up yourself and generally just give it to the behemoth and they'll sort it out.
Yeah, the best way so it's very new. It just started to come in like a few weeks ago. But the best way we've found so far to avoid it is to just make less shipments, but larger. So obviously, like if you're typically sending one pallet of a few boxes on it, or even smaller shipments of just a few boxes, you're not giving Amazon the opportunity to split that up into multiple shipments. But if you do just a slightly larger one and it gets split up more than it normally would, now you're paying those extra freight costs. If instead you hold that inventory off for 2-3 months until it's a large enough shipment that it would have been 6-7 shipments anyways, then you can do okay and avoid this fee almost entirely, and it doesn't really raise your costs. However, now you're storing more inventory, likely with Amazon, and probably incurring a slightly higher, maybe not slightly, depending on how big your products are, storage fee, because if that inventory sits for too long at Amazon, you have a monthly storage fee you're also paying them.
Okay, good news, bad news, good news, bad news. And they're waiving the fee, the inventory fee for April you have mentioned here, which again, sounds like the carbon tax. Like you get it at first, it's just like, yeah, it's no big deal. Then everything starts getting more expensive, but that's just the way of the world these days.
If only. That's a different fee entirely that they're waiving for April.
Oh, good.
A whole nother new one. The inventory placement fee is already being charged. On the flip side of that inventory placement fee is a new low inventory fee. If you have less than 28 days of products, like from what they're determining based on your sales velocity the last few months, you have less than 28 days in stock, they are starting to charge a ramping fee per unit fulfillment that as it gets closer to stocking out, they charge you more and more per unit fulfillment, because what they're saying is they can't keep it distributed throughout the US as well. And because they can't keep it distributed, it costs them more to ship to customer, because they might have to ship a product from now New York to California, when if you had enough inventory with them, they could have kept that inventory in California and saved money on their fulfillment. So they're saying, you're costing us more, we're passing that cost on to you. So now if you don't at least maintain minimum 28 days worth of inventory, you're charged a fee per unit fulfillment after that as well. That one is waived for the month of April because they're saying this is kind of complicated for brands to figure out for the next month. So they're charging it for April, but then they're crediting it back so that brands can see how much it will be if they don't fix their inventory levels.
What's interesting about some of these fees is they're making encouragements to optimizing how you handle your inventory on Amazon. So it's like, if you can do it well, you're going to end up like not paying anything extra. But if you start sort of overstocking, understocking, you're going to end up in a position where you're actually paying more, which Amazon's saying is it costs them more when you have poor management. So we're going to charge you for it, which to an extent, fair, but whether it actually is or not, because it's already very expensive, is up for debate.
It's like a rewind fee, like from Blockbuster. It's like you didn't rewind it. You caused us to have a little bit extra time to rewind it. So you're getting dinged. Look what happened to Blockbuster. So I don't think Amazon's a little more entrenched than Blockbuster, but fees. What else is new? And then what's this other fee? Refund administration fee.
This one's pretty simple though. if you have a higher refund rate than your category average, Amazon's charging you a per refund cost for them having to handle your refunds, because they're saying, well, your product gets refunded more than usual and your fulfillment costs are going to go up because of that. So they're charging a fee on all of those refunds that are above that rate. It's not like if you're above that rate, you could charge on every refund, but there's a refund handling fee basically if you're above the category average. What's your category average? I don't know. The dashboard doesn't really work yet that they've built for this. So soon you will know, but it's not being charged yet. So hopefully the dashboard works before it starts to get charged.
But again, as you said in the beginning, Clifford, these are a lot of these fees. There's some of them that are going to ding you regardless, but for the brands that are better organized, they're less likely to get dinged.
Yeah, I think there's a scenario here where you have very good inventory management. You keep things well in stock, which we always say to every single Amazon brand. It's like one of the number one things is just staying in stock consistently. Amazon loves it when you're in stock consistently, and they prioritize you to the customer because they don't want to sell someone something that they can't come back 2 months later and buy again. So staying in stock consistently really does help more than almost anything your organic ranking over a large period of time. So managing your inventory well, making sure your product's not over refunded compared to your category, which is important anyways, all of these things, like Rob said, are kind of just penalizing poor management a lot harder. So if you can do this better than the competition, you have a nice little profit advantage compared to them.
And if you're listening to D2C podcast, the all killer, no filler Amazon version, especially, you're probably in that group of organized go-getters. So good. Congratulations for being a podcast listener. Tell your friends. Okay, let's go deep on placement modifiers. I think this is another Clifford topic because this is kind of more related to Amazon ads. Why are placement modifiers your life lately, all in caps, Clifford?
So roughly 3-4 months ago, and I think we did talk about this on the podcast when it was first introduced, Amazon introduced a rest of search multiplier on ad campaigns. For very simple context, sponsored product ads are the ads that show up in the grid. If you're not super familiar with Amazon ads, they're the ads that show up in the product grid all over the place. They can land in basically three places. Top of search, so those are the 2 on mobile, the 4 on desktop, typically just very top of search, first page in that grid. They can land rest of search, which is anywhere else in the grid other than those top few placements. And they can land on product pages, which is all those rows of stuff underneath other products pages, like recommended products and all these things. A lot of those are ads. So those are the three places. Of course, as you'd expect, top of search typically converts higher than rest of search, converts a little bit less, and those product page ones convert the worst, as you'd expect. Cost per clicks follow that same trend. What's really interesting about this, in the past, we haven't had a lot of incredible control over where those are showing. So you might just put a keyword that you're advertising to, say trail running shoes, as we do. You're advertising to trail running shoes. You actually, if your bid is really low, you might not show in their search results at all for trail running shoes. All your placements might just end up on a product page of some competitor that's related to the word trail running shoes. So although you think you're showing up in search, you're not really. You're in this like random competitor's product page, or you're deep on like the fourth page of search results. Like your ad's doing next to nothing. So what you can do is tell Amazon, well, I'm willing to bid a dollar for this keyword overall, but if you show me top of search, I'm willing to bid $2. So you can start to make these modifiers now, and we're starting to get some really interesting data now that we have control over all of them, where we can say, like, for a product that's maybe more expensive than the category we're in, let's boost up the rest of search multiplier because we're not really competitive at the top of search. But for the customers that actually scroll down a little bit on that first page, then those are the shoppers who are a little bit more interested in something else, something that they might actually take a risk on paying a little bit more for. And we're actually performing better rest of search than we would top of search. So it's not worth showing at the top, but let's show like in the third, fourth row or whatnot. And so we're starting to get some really interesting, and this completely changes depending on the product, on the brand, on the search, all of that. But what I'm finding is almost every single campaign that you're running has these modifiers. If you don't look at them, your campaign performance can be totally out of whack with how it's actually doing. Like top line level metrics could look like your campaign has a one ROAS. You might go into it and actually top of search, you had a six ROAS, but all your money's being wasted on product pages and it's driving down your overall results. Or flip side, a campaign might look like it's at like a six ROAS. You go look at it and actually it's at a six ROAS only in this specific placement or something like that. And the other ones are doing terribly and you have to adjust. And so if you don't look at these placement modifiers inside your campaign, you don't adjust them, then you're going to end up probably pausing, reducing budgets, changing up how your campaign is advertising, and you're not actually getting the full picture and you're missing huge opportunities to push harder into certain areas or where you should be pulling back from spend that's wasteful.
Seems like the difference between buying a suit off the rack at Men's Warehouse and it just being like super boxy, not versus going to a tailor who's going to nip and tuck it in all the right ways to make your large chest look great. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. And it like really just lets you get very specific about where you're showing an ad, which can help you get sort of further inside the mind of the consumer. Like I think Clifford's point that he hit there is super important, where it's top of search isn't always the winner. Like sometimes you do want to display lower down because you just can't compete at that top of search. And that's not a product question. That's a product relative to search term question. Because the bulk of Amazon, like your traditional shopper is probably looking for like the lowest cost item. And the lowest cost items are probably going to hold those top positions. But not everyone is looking for that. Some people do want the tailored suit, but they're still just searching a generic sort of suit search term.
And it tells you something the farther, this reminds me of the podcast we did with Four Sigmatic, where we're talking about going after people who are tired of Folgers. And one way you'd tell that someone is tired of an incumbent would be because they scrolled to the third page or whatever, right? So it's sort of an intent signal that you're finding them that deep. So when you find them that deep, they're more qualified perhaps, which would be a good reason you'd want to bid more aggressively there.
Yeah. So we might be looking like more sort of rest of search in that analogy. Whereas like if you're bidding on like mushroom coffee exact match, we want to be top of search. Like
yeah.
That's because the intent is there for that term.
Super neat. Nice. Mm-hmm. Now, the third thing we're going to talk about today is McCosmix. Amazon Cosmos. What is Amazon Cosmos? I was just Googling it. I couldn't even see what it is. Is it?
Yeah. So Clifford probably have a better explanation here. I'll give the sub headline to their like the post about it, but it's a large scale e-commerce common sense knowledge generation and serving system at Amazon.
Wow. So that's got to be AI. That's a long way of saying AI, that there is something to do with AI, that is like a knowledge base that they're curating with AI. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The best way I have to explain it is, so I read, they have a research paper on this, a bunch of very smart AI researchers working on something. They've now A/B tested it live on the platform and done a whole bunch of tests to show that it seems to be increasing order value. It seems to be increasing how much people are spending on the platform. So it does seem like something they will continue to roll out even more. Basically, I'll show it with an example. This is the easiest, I think, way to explain what they're doing here is if you search something like home decor right now on Amazon, what you're going to get a lot might, depending on the person, you might get completely different results these days because they might have already implemented this. But previously, you're going to get a whole bunch of products that have home decor, the word, somewhere in their title, in their bullets. They're products that have shown to Amazon's algorithm that when someone searches home decor, they're likely to buy these products. And these products have this word a lot in their listing. It's a classic, like same way Google used to work, classic SEO, put the word in there more and it works better. But they're starting to change this to say, okay, when someone searches home decor, what is their intent of that search? And they don't know yet. So they take that home decor search, they plug it into a large language model, like a ChatGPT equivalent, and say, well, what are people normally looking for when they look for home decor? And it says, like, well, they might be looking for wall art, or they might be looking for furniture, or they might be looking for this and that. And they'll give them a few different categories. And so Amazon will now take those categories and show you the top ranking of this one, that one, that one, and that one. So it'll show you the top ranking wall art, and it'll show you the top ranking chair, and the top ranking plant or whatever. like it's now going to take that search instead of just showing you everything that ranks well for the term home decor and put home decor 10 times in their title. It's going to use your search and try to show you a variety of things to narrow it down. And what you'll start to see, and people have likely already started to see on the mobile app especially, is a little button underneath your search of little sub ideas. So if you do search something, it'll say a good example I think that they used in the research paper was on camping gear. So you could search camping gear and it's going to have a little bunch of sub buttons that's like tent, backpack, like water bottle, like what more are you looking for? And then now when you click on that, it's sub narrowing you down even more. And then once it figures out what you buy, it retrains the model to start to learn on like, okay, they searched that, clicked on that, they bought this, and it trains it more and more. So it does better each time. Another example that they used was if a woman searches for shoes for pregnant women, Amazon doesn't know what shoes for pregnant, like, yeah, there might be a few shoes that put pregnant women in their title or something like that, but it doesn't have great data or doesn't have a great idea of what that means. So we can ask the large language model, someone searches for shoes for pregnant women, what are they looking for? But what they'll do is see that, well, that person bought slip resistant shoes. That must mean slip resistant shoes are good shoes for pregnant women. It tells the large language model that for the future. And next time it'll recommend that as one of the options that someone might be looking for a little bit more like weighted in that direction.
And it's probably weighting your past purchases. Like in the camping analogy, it'd be like, oh, they already bought a water bottle. So they're probably looking for a sleeping bag or something. And over time, it may even have to ask less and less questions because it'll know that people, when they search this, their previous search history was this. So therefore it's most likely that they're looking for this, I would imagine.
Yeah, 100%. And then the way that as a brand, obviously, again, it's new. We don't even know how many people are trialing it with, how much they're rolling it out, but it does seem promising to them. So I would assume anything that makes them more money. I think the stat they used is they got like 0.7% more sales on 10% of the Amazon audience that they tested it on, but that led to like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, at scale.
So a tiny change, obviously, for if they can improve conversion rate, even the tiniest amount, that results in huge amounts of money. So that will be something they roll out quickly. But what to do as a brand, you might just think, well, you can't really do anything. Like you just keep going as you go. But the biggest thing is really just fill in as many attributes in the back end of your listing as you can so that you give yourself more opportunity to show for all of these different things. There's a lot of random attributes, a lot of brands, including us in a lot of cases, because there was not really a huge use for them, would get ignored. So like specific uses or used together with or special features and all these like other weird attributes that were outside of the title, bullets, description, generic search terms. There's a ton of these other fields that have always existed in the catalog. A lot of people ignored. And it seems like this new model is going to start to try to use those and also try to backfill them for ones that don't have it. So we're also finding a not so fun thing is AI is also filling in some of these attributes with what it thinks are the best answers to some of these things. A lot of the time they're wrong. So it gives you a little thing to like review what it's changing, but they're starting to just auto change a lot of these things in the back end because their model needs them to start to make these recommendations.
I sent you guys that funny TikTok of the guy trying to buy a black t-shirt and the title of the product was from a 8 consonant like brand with like 3 X's and 3 Y's in it. And then it's like black t-shirt for running, for workout, black t-shirt fits you so good, black t-shirt. And it's like, will this eventually address that issue potentially where people will be able to just pick succinct product names instead of trying to spam keywords into their product titles?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's the possibility there that it could do it. Also, I think as Amazon's algorithm becomes smarter and smarter, it removes some of the ability to just circumnavigate the system by just feeding it the data that you think it needs. So this might make it harder to sort of like, I mean, we've already seen like gone are the days of doing like big giveaways, cause Amazon kind of got rid of those, or like setting your product price to like a cent and like giving away 100 products to build rank. Like though that's a super old tactic. So I think like this algorithm might replace today's tactics. and make it a better platform for consumers and a more fair platform for marketers, I guess.
Very cool. And then finally, Jeff Bezos, I hear, is downsizing by buying his third mansion. What's going on with Bezos these days?
Apparently he bought a third house on, there's this like billionaire's island in Miami called Indian Creek Island. He bought a third house on there to live in while he demolishes his other two and does a big rental of those, I guess.
Wow.
So he's doing okay, I guess.
Billionaire bunkers. I want to start a podcast where I eventually just get to tour billionaires' bunkers. I hope it's fully self-sustained, like Mark Zuckerberg's macadamia and Kobe beef factory that he's produced in Hawaii.
Rob, you've done a bunch of renos lately. Did you not buy the neighbor's house while you were renovating your house?
I didn't. I lived in my renovation. So,
Rob, are you handy? Are you doing some of your renovations?
I'm doing some of it, not all of it, but I'm doing a backsplash this weekend, so that'll be fun.
What a renaissance, man. You're mastering Amazon and building backsplashes. Just super impressive.
Doing my best. Yeah.
Well done. Cool, guys. Well, a lot of fun as always. If you just want to work with Pilot House, just reach out. If your Amazon ads campaigns look like a suit from Men's Warehouse, time to get some bespoke tailoring done. Because the environment is just getting more competitive. The fees are creeping up there. So you've got to be on your A game.
Yeah, you are not going to like the way they look.
Well, that's good. Pretty good Men's Warehouse tagline. Let's leave it there, guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're not getting the D2C newsletter, you can subscribe for free at directtoconsumer.co. And if you want to learn more about Pilot House's all-killer, no-filler services, take off to pilothouse.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.